I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, we are back. And a couple of weeks ago, something happened, and I think our guest would be interested in this and might enjoy this. But Travis Hearman invited me over to play Dungeons & Dragons for the first time. You know, Travis Hearman, Rogues of the Black Fury. He probably wishes I would stop mentioning Rogues of the Black Fury and mention some of his more recent books, but that one just stuck in my head because of I should be writing. Anyway, he invites me over to play Dungeons & Dragons for the first time.
Wait, a really long time. This is the first time you've ever played?
No. The first time with him.
Ah, okay.
And so I roll a dwarf rogue, which is unusual. You know, usually you don't see those. But I roll a dwarf rogue, and the very first thing the dwarf rogue does is he starts a bar fight so that he can then go through the crowd who are engaged in the bar fight picking pockets. Hmm. And that, to me, is a great start to a sword and sorcery story.
Agreed. And for those people like, who's that other person talking? that other person is Howard Andrew Jones. He has got a new book out called For the Killing of Kings. Howard, we had on the show many years ago, so many years ago, that when I emailed him to be on the show again, because I saw on Facebook that he had a new book out, and I'm like, let's get Howard on the show. It's been a while. It's been so long that his email address that I had for him no longer works. And I was like, emailed him, was waiting a couple days. I'm like, gee, Howard totally blowing us off. What's up with that? And I reached out to him on Facebook, and he's like, yeah, that email doesn't work anymore. So here's my new one. And we got him back. I think we had you on the show in like 2012 or something like that. I think that's where the email goes back to.
That's right.
So many years later, can't believe it's been that long, we have Howard Andrew Jones back on the show. Howard, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I believe the last time you were on the show, there were several times during the episode that I referred to you as Handrew. Combined your first names. This was also back in the day when we were recording late at night during the week, and my son would have been very young at the time, so I was probably sleep deprived and a little crazy and just was slurring your name together. So let's see how many times I do that today. We're recording during daytime hours, so I'm hoping that I can say your name correctly and not screwed up too bad. But thank you for coming on the show. And you do have a new book out, and it is called For the Killing of Kings. And maybe before we get into anything else, you can tell our listeners a little something about why they may want to go and read this book.
Well, you know, when you start promoting these things, they say, okay, Howard, you got to have an elevator pitch ready. What's the elevator pitch? And I said, okay, it's a cross between the Three Musketeers and the Chronicles of Amber. And that's not as much of a malarkey as elevator pitches really are, because I loved the original Chronicles of Amber. I've read that the way a lot of people read The Lord of the Rings. I think I've clocked in 10 or 12 reads of the original five books.
Wow. You're right up there with probably Paul Weimer.
That's Paul Weimer's favorite stuff. Yeah.
So I love the intricate world building and layers within layers as the mystery slowly unveils, and the narrator who's kind of good guy, but maybe not, and all these superpowered characters. But then the other thing is, when I went to the theater, I guess it was in 75, one of the earliest times I remember seeing something, because I would have been like, what, seven, in the theater that wasn't a cartoon, right, was the Four Musketeers. Now, if you're not as old as I am, you may not know that in the 70s they did Three Musketeers and Four Musketeers as two movies back to back. They actually filmed them all at the same time, but I digress. Anyway, I went to see this movie, The Four Musketeers, and it blew me away. All the camaraderie and the swashbuckling and the daring action. And it kind of had a lasting impact on the way I looked at things. So when I wanted to start work on a secondary world fantasy adventure series, I wanted to touch base with The Chronicles of Amber, but I wanted to have sort of this elite warrior force that's one for all and all for one kind of guys, right? And gals. Actually, the main protagonist is a gal. And that's based on my love of the Four Musketeers.
Very cool. Did you ever see that there was like a Three Musketeers movie in the, oh gosh, early 2000s. It was like a martial arts movie.
You know, I did not.
I really liked that one. They incorporated martial arts in it. And I remember, I think there was only one pseudo big star in it. And it was one of the, oh gosh, I cannot remember her name. But she was like the handmaiden. But she was the only big star I felt like was in that movie. But I really enjoyed it because they did more. It was more of a almost like a Hong Kong style movie. Like they did wire work and they did martial arts.
I remember seeing it still swashbuckling. Yeah, that there was a gap in there when our kids were little where I really didn't get out very much, nor did I get much sleep. So I think that one passed me by.
I think John can empathize with you on that.
Oh, we all can. If you have kids, there's that period. You know, of 10 years where you get no sleep. But that sounds great. You know, and with you were mentioning the Chronicles of Amber. That's a series that I have not read that I know I want to read. And I think part of the problem was it out of print for a long? Is it still out of print? I feel like that's something that I hear whenever I kind of look at that.
I think they've got all 10 volumes together as the Great Book of Amber. Okay. You know, there's some people that enjoy the second series, but I never did. It's narrated by a separate character. And I always wanted more of the original character, Corwin mm-hmm. of Amber, because he was so engaging. Mm-hmm. So, but I think you can get them all in the Great Book of Amber.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of those, on the list, that I haven't read that I really want to read. And, what year did those come out originally, or what years did they come out?
Well, I want to say that it was the late 60s into the early 70s. But of course, I didn't encounter them until the mid to late 70s myself, being a youngster.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. And I'm sorry, Patrick, go for it.
No. I was just going to say, I had to look it up. The movie I'm thinking of is just called The Musketeer. Mm. And the only actor in it that I knew of at the time that was name is Mina Suvari.
Oh,
and she played the handmaid to the lady, whatever. And but that's the one that I'm thinking of. And it was 2001.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would have been right after my daughter was born. So that explains why it escaped me.
Yes, there are these black spots when your kids are young that you're like, what? I don't know what was going on in those years. I was, yeah. So cool. All right. Well, everyone, go and check that out. That sounds like an awesome book. I'm looking forward to checking it out myself. Before we get on to our next section, I do want to take a moment to thank everybody that backs us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We couldn't do the show without you, and we're very appreciative if you dig the show and dig interviews with folks like Howard here. Consider becoming one of our backers. It really helps us out a lot. And you will also, if you do that, you get access to our private patron-only Facebook group now, which is something that Patrick started a few weeks ago. And we're loving it. It's great. It's a small community now because you have to be one of our backers to have access to it. But it kind of takes a lot of the noise out of Facebook, and we're having great conversations over there, mostly about not so much the podcast, but about books that we're reading and shows that we're watching and creative things. And Patrick is really doing a great job over there, and our listeners are posting some great stuff and getting into some good conversations in the comments. So if you want to get rid of some of the noise on Facebook and talk about cool stuff like we talk about on the show, become one of our backers. You could do it for $1 a month, and then you have access to that group, and it'll be fun, and it helps us out a lot. So consider that. patreon.com/functionalnerds. Now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Howard, what is your pick this week?
You know, for once, I'm actually somewhat relevant with something that's fairly recent and modern. And my pick is going to be The Dragon Prince.
Oh, okay.
Have you guys heard anything about this?
Oh, we sure have. Go for it.
Okay.
But please tell our listeners about it.
Well, it looks as though it was put together One of the people involved is one of the original producers of Avatar the Last Airbender, the cartoon. Now, my family and I happen to be big fans of the original and the sequel to some extent. So we were pretty eager when Dragon Prince premiered. I have to say that it took us a few episodes to warm to the characters. We weren't immediately enthralled, but by the third or fourth episode, we really got involved. The characters are rich. They've got a lot of depth. There's some complexities with the characters, and the storytelling is lovely. The visuals are striking. And anyway, the second season dropped just a few weeks ago, and we binged watched it. I guess it was Thursday evening. So yeah, we're quite taken with it. And so far as I know, they haven't made definite plans that they're going to continue the series. And darn it, I want to see how the story ends. So you know, I want to be involved. If it needs a letter writing campaign, sign me up.
It's a great show.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. Patrick and I both watched the first season. Patrick, you finished the second season,
yes.
Right? And I'm halfway through the second season right now. You can binge that in a night because it's like 9 episodes of 27 minutes. So it's like a long movie if you watch it all in one shot, I imagine. But really well done, and couldn't agree with you more. And Patrick and I have talked about it before, but we're big fans of the Avatar The Last Airbender and Korra. And so anytime those creatives are getting together for something, I am interested. I think they did such a good job, Patrick.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. My question for Howard, as a fan of The Last Airbender, what are your thoughts or take on Netflix's plans, and they're working with the original creators, their plans to do the live action Airbender?
I remember that being mentioned, and my thought is, why? When it's done so well, so right the first time. I noticed Disney's been doing that lately. You know, there's plans in progress to make live actions this and live actions that. And
you ain't never had a friend like me.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe it'll be awesome. I'm all in favor of reaching a broader audience, and maybe they can reduce some of the clunky bits. But Avatar The Last Airbender, the cartoon series, was done so well. Why do you need to do it again so soon?
Because I think the reasoning is people want more.
Yeah.
And they took Airbender into the comics. There's lots of comics that take place. They did the same thing with Korra. Korra's story continued in comics after, you know, Nickelodeon screwed that all up. At this point, Nickelodeon, I'm so pissed at them. It's not even funny. But they continue that on with comics. So people still want more from that world. And I don't know, maybe doing the live action just provides them with that opportunity to be able to do more and do something a little different. I don't know if it's going to be a straight adaptation or if they're going to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I'd be more excited if they would just tell some more Avatar stories, maybe go further back in time and give us the life story of some of these other people. I think that would be – I'd be much more interested in that than seeing the same story retold with live actors.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because you, there is so much of a history because he's supposed to be – do they ever give what number Avatar Aang is?
No, but if you look in the temple with all the statues, there are a lot.
Yeah, it's like hundreds at least.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they can go back. I mean, it's almost, it's a similar mythology with Star Wars and like Jedi is that they've been around a long time. Thousands of years, and at any point you can go back and tell this story in this world with these sort of familiar ideas, but you could tell a totally different story. And it's not to get too much into Star Wars, but it's funny how much they haven't done that in Star Wars yet. I think we're getting there, but and I know with Star Wars, that's the rumor about the Benioff and Weiss, the Game of Thrones showrunners. They're making their Star Wars movies, and the big rumor is that it's going to be, you know, thousands of
Knights
years
of the Old Republic. Yeah.
Well, not that story specifically, but something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's going to be more of a medieval kind of, where they're not going to have any of the current characters. And I agree with Howard. I think with the Avatar: The Last Airbender world. You can totally do that. You can go back to any period. And that was one of the things that I thought was so good about Korra, even though Korra takes place after, they do have those arcs where they go back in time and they have like sort of telling stories about the spirit world and all that kind of stuff. And I did like that a lot about Korra.
I did. I wish Nickelodeon, as Patrick was saying, hadn't messed with them so badly. I understand that they told them, oh, we're only going to do one season. So they truncated the story and the villain who was originally going to fill out four seasons into that first season. And then they had to scramble with more stuff. And it didn't always work.
Yeah. And they also, like, when they were, they, as Patrick said, they didn't really know what to do with it. And then they said they were going to cancel and then they wouldn't. And then they like just would like,
and then they went online, like, and it was online only.
Oh, and, right. Yeah. And then they would like release four episodes in 1 week and then nothing. And oh, it was a mess. They had no idea what to do with it. Yeah. They really dropped the ball on that one for sure.
And I will say, as far as Dragon Prince is concerned, I don't know about the two of you, but what's killing me is I keep wanting them to run into some poor guy who's pushing a cart of cabbages.
Yes.
My wife can't get over the, oh my God, I can't believe I've gone blank on the guy's name. The wizard character's voice, the young.
Callum?
Oh,
Callum?
Yeah, because it's Sokka, right? It's
She says, I can't get over Sokka's voice coming out of that character.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And it doesn't quite take me out of it, but yeah, because there's no, he's doing a different, it's Sokka's voice. It's the same manner. It's just that voice actor doing his voice.
Yeah. It's almost like the heyday of Star Trek, The Next Generation, where the alien of the week and you're going, I know that voice. I know the voice behind that makeup. Who is that? And you're trying to figure it out. And you didn't have IMDb. You had to just rely on your ears to tell you who the hell that was.
Or how about this dates me, the Star Trek animated cartoon series. Did you ever catch that?
Oh yeah, it's on Netflix.
Well, is it? Well, the budget was so low, they'd always just have James Doohan do any of the aliens. It's like, wait, that's James Doohan without his Scottish accent.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That's awesome. On the same topic, Howard, so you said your family watched Dragon Prince. Did you guys watch the Voltron that's on there?
No, I don't know anything about that.
Well, that is worth checking out. Voltron, it's done now.
Of the universe.
It's different creators, but also some of the Avatar: The Last Airbender alumni creators. Different than the Dragon Prince. But other people that were writers and creators on Avatar: The Last Airbender. And it's a similar, now obviously it's Voltron and they're using the 80s cartoon as a template, but they're telling a cohesive story. And obviously it's more of it's a future kind of, you know, space faring adventure kind of thing, but they do.
And they're using, and just to clarify, John, because there were multiple Voltron cartoons, they're using the lions.
Yeah, it's the Lions one. But if you like that vibe of the Avatar: The Last Airbender, and you like the Dragon Prince, I think the Voltron is worth checking out. Watch a couple episodes. What's interesting is that one's been out for a couple of years now, and they kind of released them in half seasons. So I think there's something like 8 seasons, but many of the seasons are only like 6 episodes or 7 episodes.
Sort of like how BBC does their seasons. Yeah.
So they're, you know, half hour episodes or less than that, 20 something minutes. And yeah, don't be put off by the 8 seasons. Cause like I said, a lot of those seasons are short. So I think in total, if you watch the whole 8 seasons, maybe it's like 60 episodes or something, but you know, check it out. Watch the first few episodes. If it doesn't grab you, then no big deal. But if you like The Dragon Prince and you like Avatar: The Last Airbender, it is of a similar quality, I would say, at least.
Wow.
Certainly worth checking out, I think.
Well, I appreciate that lead, because there's frequently nothing on that we want to see. And we really do like the writing and the care.
Yeah,
these shows have had, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I said, it's some of the same creative team. So worth checking out for sure. So So that's not my pick, but there you go. That's my recommendation. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
My pick dropped on Netflix a little while ago, Incredibles 2.
Ooh, okay, sure.
And I had really wanted to see this in the theater, but with everything going on in my life, it just doesn't work out that I can go to the movies. So I had to wait. And when I noticed that it had dropped on Netflix, I was like, oh, I wanted to see that. And I finally got to watch it last weekend, and I was just cracking up the whole time. There's a scene with Jack-Jack, the baby, battling a raccoon in the backyard.
Yes.
That is the funniest damn thing I have seen in a long time. I died. It was like this epic battle scene, but it's a raccoon and a baby. It's like every movie has it, right? The moment where the epic battle comes between the two characters, and in this case, it was Jack-Jack and the raccoon, and I died, John. It was the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. I even took to like social media afterwards, and I'm like, I'm dying, Jack-Jack and the raccoon. And I had to go out and find like if there was a clip, and there was, and I shared it. But yeah, I loved the movie. I loved it. I get some of the criticisms that people had that it was a rehash of the original movie. And in a lot of ways it was, like they had a lot of the same themes and concepts. But I liked how they flipped the roles on Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible. He suddenly had to take care of the kids while she went out and fought crime. And he did the best he could, but boy, was he not doing great. The kids were just – I don't think he understood, you know, how much work went into taking care of those kids. And so that was interesting, you know, and Violet and all that. It was just a great movie. And Elastigirl did a great job going out and fighting crime and figuring out what the hell was going on.
How'd you like her theme song? Her theme song cracked me up.
Yeah, all the theme songs were great. But yeah.
Those are so good. We actually saw that in the movies, a rare time. We've gone to the movies recently, and we saw that over the summer. And the Pixar stuff is always so good. You know, they just they spend so much time. And that's because, like, the first movie came out, like, over 10 years ago, right? There's a big gap between.
It's long gap, yeah.
Yeah, so even though Pixar gets, they're mostly praised, and deservedly so, the one criticism that has come up with Pixar is the sequels now with the ongoing franchises. But even when they do those, there's always a lot of time. It's not just let's pump this one out there so we can, you know, make some more buck. There generally speaking is a pretty good deal of time between those movies. Like, look at the Toy Story movies. You know, I guess the second one came out relatively soon after the first one, but there's like 10 years between the second and the third ones, at least. It could be more than that. And the fourth one that's coming out, that's coming up probably on 10 years since Toy Story 3. So they do take their time and make sure that they have a solid story in place and make sure all the jokes work and all, you know, I don't know. They're always so well done. And again, speaking as parent, it's such a wonderful thing to live in this time where you have Pixar, well, not only the Pixar movies, but all the other animated movies have had to up their game to compete with Pixar, that when you have your kid that gets super into a movie, it bears repeated viewing. you know.
Right, right. And I think
he's speaking from experience, Howard. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the original Incredibles, that holds up to repeated viewing and listening. You know, if we're when the kids were younger, we'd be driving somewhere in a car and we had those little handheld viewers, we wouldn't mind listening in because it's so good. I liked the second one quite well. I don't think it quite held up. I didn't mind even the repetitious themes. I just didn't think the villain's plan made as much sense. Mm-hmm. And normally you don't notice those things, but I imagined myself, if the kids were that young again on endless repeat, I think it would begin to bother me. Whereas Syndrome is a great villain. Not that he's a good guy, but he's a great villain, and his plan made a lot of sense. Everything was perfectly in place.
Yeah, it was very good. And they're always good, those movies. My pick, I'm going to pick a book, and it is one of the nonfiction books that I've read recently. The title of the book is called Mastery, The Key to Success and Long-Term Fulfillment, which is very self-helpy sounding, but it's really not. The author is George Leonard. This is an older book. It was published in 1992. This goes along with a lot of the themes that I've spoken about on the podcast before, about practicing your craft, whatever your craft may be. And I've talked a lot about deliberate practice. And as listeners know, I'm a musician. I've played guitar since I'm a teenager. I went to music school. I'm a music teacher, all that stuff. So I've always been practicing something, whether it's a specific thing about the guitar or the years I studied composition or got super into writing songs and studied that. Learning to play the mandolin, learning to play the all these things. And about 2 years ago, I started to focus on playing the bass, and I've been playing the bass guitar for about 2 years and have gone through a bunch of books on how to play that. And in the past, since last summer, I've been playing the upright bass, which is a totally different thing, and really been getting into that and practicing that, because that's way different than anything I've done before. So it is like kind of like starting over again. And I am very into this idea of deliberate practice, and mastery is another way to put it. And I got a lot out of this book, and I think it's a shorter book, so it's not even a big investment of your time, but a lot of good takeaways. And one of the big ones, which I think both Howard and Patrick can relate to as writers and practicing their craft, the big takeaway from this book is George Leonard refers to this as loving the plateau. And what he means by that is whenever we're learning something or practicing some skill, we go through periods of we'll see our improvement real quick and we'll get a little spurt. We'll be like, yeah, I'm kicking butt at this thing. And then you get on the plateau and and you're there for a long time. And the reason that is just how we learn anything as human beings is that whenever you have a complex skill, whether it's writing or playing an instrument or some kind of sport, like gymnastics or whatever, it's so complex. And there are all these smaller skills that you must master. And what happens is maybe you focus and you do this one small skill. And you get it, and you practice that enough where then it kind of becomes a part of you where you don't have to think about it so much, and it becomes part of your muscle memory. And you're like, yeah, I can do that. Well, now, as if you want to get on to the next thing, now you have to become conscious of what you're doing again to learn the next thing. So you kind of like fall apart again. And then, you know, you're kind of starting over. So the point of this plateau thing, this idea, is that you have to, in order to get good at something, you have to learn to love that plateau where it doesn't seem like you're making any progress, where you're just plugging along at it every day, because that's how you get good. It's that, as I think every writer that's ever been on this show has ever said, and Patrick said it too, it's like, how do you learn how to write? You put your butt in the chair and you write, and you write every day or whatever that comes out to for you. And that's, I think, what he's getting at in this book is that learn to love that, because that is the only way that you can get good about it. Howard, what were you going to say? I feel like you're...
Oh, no, that makes a lot of sense. Who said that about the 10,000 hours? Was that McCartney, or was Paul McCartney just repeating that?
McCartney was repeating that. It became popularized through Malcolm Gladwell in his book Outliers. But he got that from Anders Ericsson, who wrote a book called Peak, who wrote that book after the fact, because Anders Ericsson is a scientist, psychologist of some sort, and he had put out a bunch of these kind of journals about it, like these scientific papers. And I think when Malcolm Gladwell put out his book and that theory became real popular and Malcolm Gladwell was getting all the credit for it, I think Anders Ericsson was like, that was kind of my thing. And I'm going to write a book about that now. So anyway, that's where it comes from. But, and I'm sure McCartney, and I, that 10,000 hours thing has become kind of ubiquitous in you hear that come up all the time now.
Well, you have to put in that time and apply yourself without looking for any reward except for losing yourself in the work. And I think the analogy I most understand, I've been practicing martial arts now since my mid-30s. And that you want to get from white belt to black belt when you start. You know, you're at the bottom end, you barely know anything, you got to memorize all these blocks, right? So you're doing a sparring exercise, someone's pretending to throw a punch at you, and then, which block should I use? And pretty soon you're doing real sparring, and you can't remember which block you're using. Oh, should I sweep it in? Should I sweep it out? Upper block, whatever. Well, sometime right around brown belt, I was able, if I saw a punch coming, I would just block automatically with whatever block I needed from the proper angle. It's like, oh, it's finally starting to clarify. And I had somewhere after white belt, you're so embarrassed to have a white belt, at least I was. When you start getting into the colored ranks, you know, blue, red, whatever, right? You're less worried about the advancing and more about just getting it right. You're plateauing, right? But you're making these incremental improvements and aren't aware of it. And then a little moment will come along, you're like, wait a second, I guess I was improving all this time.
It's interesting that you bring up martial arts. What martial arts do you study specifically, Howard?
Shotokan karate.
Okay. The George Leonard, who is the man that wrote this book, he was in he was a fighter pilot. I want to say it was during World War II. I don't know, maybe it was a little later than that. And he went to pilot training school in the Air Force and was stationed, instead of going into combat right away, he became a flight instructor, and he was mad about it. He wanted to go fight. He didn't want to train other guys. And so he learned a lot about teaching doing that. And he was probably like 23 years old when he was a teacher, you know. Yeah. He was probably a young man, didn't know anything about teaching other than that. So he related some of those experiences. But he wrote this book after he retired from the service. And when he was, I believe he would have been in his 50s at the time, he started studying Aikido. And so that's where a lot of this comes from, was from his experience with martial arts and starting that, and as a beginner, as an adult, and learning it, and eventually that whole process of going and doing it every day and not feeling like a lot of what you just described are some of the things that he talks about in the book, and how this can basically be applied to just about anything that you learn. And that's what he loved about Aikido, was that he eventually got to the point where he loved that plateau. He loved the, I'm just going to be here for a while and I'm going to practice this stuff.
And, yeah. And you don't care and you lose yourself in it. I love, some schools call them forms. We call them katas, where you're doing a series of, I guess if you're watching it almost looks like a combat dance, and it is, you're doing a series of steps and moves and blocks and punches. But once you have learned one of those forms, and there's numerous kinds, once you learn one of those forms, when you're running through it, you guys, we were just talking about Last Airbender, right? You saw the forms that they were learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, once you're doing that and you're heavily involved in the form, I guess that is what meditation must be like. I'm just completely lost in the form. I'm not worried about what my next deadline is, or whether or not people are going to buy my book, or what I'm going to pick up for lunch. I'm just completely lost in the form. It's clearing the head, clearing the mind. You know, I love the martial arts because it's not just good for you physically. I think it's really good for you mentally as well. You're not worried about the advance. You're just worried about the moment and the plateau.
Now, do you think that equates to your work as a writer then? Do you feel like you get into that kind of zone while you're writing?
Yes, especially if telemarketers aren't interrupting me. Yeah, I think it has a direct application.
Do you have like a kind of a routine or something that you set up to try to get to that
space? Yes, I think you have to, when you're sitting down to write, you're going into a different mental space. Not to sound all metaphysical about it, but you can't just like pop down and start writing and expect good stuff to come out. I try to sort of recognize it as a change in mental focus. So at the very least, I will stop for a second and just kind of clear my head and take a couple of deep breaths. But I have a little writing notebook with me, and I frequently look over lists of really terrible writing mistakes that I've made over the years. I keep a list, so hopefully I won't repeat them, right? Like, for instance, know what every character wants before you start writing the scene. Little tips like that. And so I will read through those to kind of get myself in the space. And then I will hopefully be more focused and get to work.
Do you have a particular routine? Like, do you just write when you can, or do you write in the morning, you write in the afternoon? Like, is there kind of particular times of day, particular spaces that you like to write in?
Well, I do like to have a routine, but a lot of times I don't have the routine. I prefer to write in the morning. But the real answer is I write whenever I can. But yes, I feel like I do my best work in the morning, and I also work in the afternoon at it. But a lot of times if I haven't managed to get anything done in the morning, the afternoon feels more stressful.
Mm. Yeah. Now, not to get too much into, you know, the routine of it. Do you find that, you know, do other things in your life just kind of get in the way of the writing a lot? Like, do you feel like it's a struggle to get to the writing?
Sometimes. I mean, I have two college-aged kids. When they were in high school and they'd forget something, and the high school is like a 2-minute drive from my house, you know, there'd be an interruption. Oh, I've got to take in somebody's gym shorts or something. Mm-hmm. I do some editing work too, in addition to the writing, and sometimes some project will intrude or someone will call with something urgent that has to be dealt with. So I feel like I'm juggling more interruptions, and sometimes that's an interruption to the flow.
With the way, I think a lot of times with writers these days, they, and this has probably always been the case to a certain extent, they have to juggle many things with their career. You just mentioned editing, and there's whatever kind of promotional things that it's kind of incumbent upon a writer to do these days. Do you find a way to kind of put that stuff off, like those non-writing things that have to do with your career, but, you know, can you separate them well, or do you feel like you're kind of going back and forth between the writing and the other aspects of your job?
I'm not as good at juggling those. I'm especially terrible at Twitter. I'm still not entirely sure how to use it. I have lots of friends. I guess most of them are younger than me, but it feels to me like I check Twitter. Oh, they've recently posted this. They've recently posted that. It feels like they're always on, and I can't be always on. Maybe they just have a window they go in on, but I feel like I'm always late to the conversation, or I start a conversation and no one is listening. So yeah, I don't know how, I haven't figured that one out. I would prefer to have devoted writing time and then to step back and be able to work on the promotion. But unfortunately, I can't do that. I have to sort of have a whole bunch of balls in the air at once. And I don't think I do any of them quite as well as I would if I were able to devote full attention to one.
Yeah, I think that's something that many people, most people, in fact, struggle with these days. You know, I'm increasingly seeing a lot of stories, and there's been a few books written lately about, and it doesn't seem like you have as big of a problem. If anything, you're kind of expressing that you feel like maybe you should be doing the promotional thing more than you do. I almost feel like most people have kind of the opposite problem, where they're so distracted by that they're not actually doing their main work. And I think you're seeing a lot of sort of counter arguments to our kind of social media world these days. And you're seeing a couple books, one that I haven't read yet, but I know is out, is one called Digital Minimalism by this guy, Cal Newport. And, you know, some of those books are rather extreme, where they're just like, yeah, just delete all those. Like, don't have them at all. Like, what are you getting out of them? And there's part of me that's like, you got a point. Kind of got a point.
Well, right. We only have so many hours around here. And, you know, we don't really know how long we have. And sometimes I wonder, well, you know, should I be spending time with this or with that? Unfortunately, promotion is necessary.
Yeah.
Because unless you're a really big seller, the companies aren't going to come out and promote you. But then maybe if you're a big seller, maybe they don't need to as much. I don't know.
And as far as how much time you have, Howard, I plan to live forever through unethical and immoral genetic experimentation. So,
well, there you go.
That's
well, I'm a Prince of Amber, so I'm set.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, it's tough, and it's I think if anything, what I think a lot of people are coming to is that you're probably going to, you know, just kind of maybe looking into the future a bit. You're probably going to look back and wish one would look back and wish they spent more time on their craft and less time putting clever tweets out there.
Well, yeah, exactly. I guess I feel so divorced from Twitter. I don't, maybe if I were having more conversations on it, but I'm not having very many conversations on it. If I'm going to do promotional work, I prefer to go out and engage with people. Things like we're talking right here. This is fun. I am communicating with people in a medium that I understand. I love going to conventions. I would prefer to have segment and writer time where, yeah, no one bothers me for a couple of weeks. That would be fabulous.
Mm. Yeah, it's, I agree. Again, that guy, Cal Newport, talked about this idea of, I think he called it analog social media, which was, go out and hang out with your friends.
Yeah, no, I'm sympathetic. I get that.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it. Patrick and I talked about it, and this is a whole separate topic. But just to kind of put a button on the social media thing, I watched both of those, and I think Patrick watched at least one of them. But there are these competing documentaries on Netflix and Hulu about the Fyre Festival, the FYRE.
I still haven't watched either one.
You didn't watch either of them.
No.
Worth watching. Very entertaining. Watch the Netflix one first if you do. The Fyre Festival, I don't want to get into the whole thing. It was this failed music festival, and there was shady things going on with the guy that ran it, and he ripped a bunch of people off. But it was marketed towards millennials, and it was this whole social media sensation, and went down in flames, and it's a really cautionary tale. It's a very compelling documentary if you enjoy those kinds of things. There's one on Netflix and one on Hulu. They're compelling watches. But because they kind of talk a lot about the millennials and social media, not to beat up on millennials, but it's they talk about these influencers that have all these followers on Twitter and what have you. And, you know, one of their tweets can have a big influence on how much they sell certain things and all of this kind of stuff. And watching it, and again, I'm in my mid 40s, so that's not my generation. It comes off as very hollow and very, why is this person an influencer? What do they actually do? You know, it doesn't seem like they're writing anything or producing anything or have any discernible skills or talents other than tweeting a lot. And is that where we want to go with society? I don't know. It's probably just old man doesn't understand the generation younger than him. But yeah, I think in the end, we're all better off spending time working on our craft and trying to put good work out there and trying to have relationships with people in real life. I think that's probably a better use of our time. And I think that's kind of what you're saying as well, Howard.
Yeah, I guess I was stumbling towards that. I don't mind trying these things, and I have gotten some nice relationships and conversations out of them, but I'm a writer. I blog a lot about writing on my website, and I came up with this thing called the Dr. McCoy test. And basically, Dr. McCoy frequently would say, I'm a doctor, not a something, you know, right? I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer. Like, if you're sitting here doing something like, well, am I a writer or am I a Facebook poster? Am I a writer or am I a Twitter? Am I a writer or am I a, I don't know.
I think that's great. And I think I'm going to incorporate that into my life from now on about any time I'm doing something, whether I'm questioning whether I should be doing it or not. So that's great. That's good. All right. Well,
I'm now picturing, I think it would be awesome if they, so they tried to make Star Trek IV, but all the actors wanted too much money. And so that got canceled. If they decide to reboot Star Trek again, now I would like to see Jeff Foxworthy as Dr. McCoy. And I would like to see him do a mashup of, you know, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a redneck. And you know you're a doctor when, kind of thing. I think that would be very funny.
Nice. Nice. Well, it's about all the time we have. Once again, Howard has a new book out there. It is called For the Killing of Kings. You can get that now as a hardcover. You can get that as an ebook. It is out now. Is there an audiobook for this as well?
It was being recorded a couple of weeks ago, and I imagine that means it should be available any minute.
Cool. Awesome. And I'm looking forward to checking this one out. If you like the kinds of things that Howard was talking about, I recommend that you check it out as well. You can follow Howard on Twitter at Howard Andrew John, J-O-N. And you can check out his website as well, which is just howardandrewjones.com. And Howard, is there any other projects you'd like to tell our listeners about? Any cons or anything like that coming up that you want to let them know about?
Well, I always go to Gen Con. Gen Con's a blast, and the Writers Symposium there at Gen Con is fantastic. It's one of the best conventions within a convention, and I think more and more people may be learning about it, but all kinds of talented writers show up for that, perfectly willing to share their craft at the various panels. It's, like I said, a convention within a convention, so that's great. And I'm the editor of a Sword and Sorcerer magazine called Tales from the Magician's Skull. Our first two issues launched last year, and pretty soon now we'll be launching a Kickstarter for the next two issues. So I hope that you'll keep your eyes out.
Cool. Awesome. Once again, for us, if you dig what we do, consider becoming one of our backers over at Patreon at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Thanks for the people who are already backing us. And if you're not, consider becoming a backer. And again, you can get access to that private Facebook group, and we can have some nice chats there. Patrick, anything you want to leave our listeners with before we go?
Good luck trying to find a room at Gen Con. Just saying.
I'm just saying.
There's a lottery.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's what you're going to do. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time.
Smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
'You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.